ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another Talking Rugby Union podcast. We're kind of in new surroundings, which is probably the best way to describe it. I'm also joined by Chris Heal, as per.
How are we doing, Joe? You all right?
Yeah, it's all right. It might be a bit more of an echoey room than people are used to, actually, on this podcast. I've just noticed. But no, we're back to talk about all things rugby union, which is going to be kind of mainly, I think, a bit of Premiership, Champions Cup, maybe a bit of Challenge Cup, talking about Worcester, how well they're doing. And, that's kind of going to be a bit sevens. Dubai starts tomorrow.
Yeah, big sevens coverage this week, Joe, from yourself and Gary. So have to mention all the good stuff we've been churning out on the Talking Rugby Union website.
And there is also a man in this room that we haven't heard from in a couple of weeks.
I mean, the Twitter DMs have been flying in since the start of the season. Yeah, where is he? Where's he gone? Has he disappeared off the face of the earth? But he's back. He's back in the room. And we're delighted to have him back on the pod so far, aren't we, Joe?
Yeah, it's Max Ashcroft, by the way, if anyone didn't understand the lead up there. Max, how are things?
Yeah, all good, thank you, yourselves.
Yeah, we've been busy producing content for Talking Rugby. What you've been doing, but you know, we've been producing content for Talking Rugby.
Yeah, you've been very busy, been doing some really good stuff, so it's been pleasing to see.
Yeah, no, it's been really good. Obviously, Saracens last week, which was also kind of tied in with our trip to Old Albanian Rugby Club. I'm trying to think what else we've been doing. Obviously, the Sevens stuff, but that's kind of been accrued over the last couple of months. The trip to Athlete Factory International Sevens. I'm trying to think what else. We've done some good stuff. We had a thing with Alex Donbrack go out today that Chris did. Dom is back on TRU after a while. He follows me on Twitter, actually. Very proud of that.
Good. No, it's been a really busy period for us. Been getting out and about and visiting, trying to get to as many clubs as possible and to see as many people as possible. So we, we're really, really pushing out as much content as possible.
Yes, and as ever, the rugby has been rolling on in the background of everything. So we are at six rounds of the Premiership. We've had, I think, two rounds of the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup competitions. Max has obviously been plying his trade in National 2 North for Sedgley Park Tigers, doing pretty well.
The only win when he plays.
It's true, actually.
I think Sedge have lost a couple of games, and I think Max may have been absent for at least one of them.
Maybe at fault for the other. But week six, we're just about to hit the sixth round of Premiership rugby action. Max watched his old team Bath play Saracens on Friday night. Max, it seems like whenever me and you talk about Bath playing on a Friday night, it's always quite depressing.
It was a bit depressing. Not for Saracens; they would have been very, very happy.
Good
with
stuff
the result.
Then, yeah.
But it was looked like a cold, wet, windy, horrible evening down at the wreck. The pitch looked like it was holding on for dear life. But it was a classic Saracens performance. Owen Farrell bossing, running the show, showing why he's probably one of the best fly off in the world. They brought some big impact off the bench for Tompkins. You know, I'm a big fan of Tompkins on the podcast. He came on and really gave him a bit more of an X factor. Bath were causing him some upset in the scrum probably for the first 20 minutes, which I think was a bit of a shock to the system for Saracens. But then Bath just took the pedal off the gas, and Saracens took the ascendancy in the scrum, which I think had a big impact. They lack a bit of underbelly, I think, Bath. When you go into those dark, deep places, they just don't seem to come out on top. And they'll be kicking themselves for not getting the win. Tom Dunn was excellent for Bath. I thought he was the best, by far the best player on the field. And if anything, he was better in my opinion than Jamie George. His tackle count was through the roof. And he seems to have, actually got his arrows sorted out, which is really important. But there are positives for Bath, but I think it's going to be a long season for him. I think they lack identity. I don't really know what they're trying to be. You know, they were like, we're going to focus on the set piece. They did it for 20 minutes and they switched off for 60. And Tom Homer was good, but you know, he showed bits here and there. You know, I won't. Rocco Degouni and Rudri were very quiet. So, and the Saracens back three had a really strong game. But yeah, Saracens again showing why they're the best club team in the world.
Yeah, because of course it was all there to play for Saracens at the minute, especially in the Premiership. The Champions Cup really doesn't matter how they do or don't do. On Friday night before the game, it was 22 points they have to overcome in order to have a fighting chance of staying up in the Premiership. Now it's down to 18, if memory serves me. Do we think Saracens could realistically escape the drop with their 35 point taken away from them?
100%. There's too many teams playing not good rugby. Mm. I mean, you look, Northampton, who do they hammer? They hammered...
That's a good question. That is an excellent question. Northampton hammered Leicester.
Exeter hammered Wasps.
Yep.
Saracens hammered Bath. Mm. So, and look, I can't see Saracens really dropping any points. You know, they might go away to Exeter, or they might go play at home against the decent Bristol side, and they might struggle. But I think fundamentally, they've got a point to prove. They're probably all a bit annoyed, you know, with everything with the salary cap, and they'll want to prove a point. Ultimately, the Premiership rugby have added an edge to them, which, you know, it's going to be interesting how it sort of unfolds over the coming months.
And one of the big talking points that has been talked about by Eddie Jones, it's actually been brought up by the press when myself and Chris were at Saracens last week, people talking about England players maybe not heading out to represent England in the autumn, not in the autumn, during the Six Nations period.
Well, we know how upset some of the England players get, you know, like all that stuff in at the World Cup about them all getting a bit angry that they might not get paid for that game that didn't get played against France. Mm-hmm. So we know they've got an opinion or two, a few of them. But look, you're never going to say no to representing your country.
No. Because it's a lot of money as well they earn for playing for England.
Yeah, look, they're not footballers either.
No.
They're not footballers. They make a very good living. Saracens guys make a better living than some.
This is why he's back.
Yeah. But you know, ultimately they're gonna step up and represent their country. And also, we're 2021. The British and Irish Lions schedule has been released today. Oh. So that's the goals for a lot of them to get. Toji and Farrell are fundamentally going to be battling for who's captain for the Lions, and you've got to start stepping up now and start sort of putting your mark on that England shirt now going into 2021, because that's a goal for a lot of the Saracens lads, is to be starting for the British and Irish Lions in South Africa.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, that South Africa tour and the British and Irish Lions is. Is it? It's one of the favourites, purely and more simply because of 1997.
Yeah, it's always got. I think it's always had that added edge. The South Africa, when the Lions go to South Africa, and more so now that they're world champions.
Oh, definitely. And,
you know, well, the team's predominantly probably going to be English players. Just yeah. You know, we don't know what's going to happen over the next 18, 24 months.
Yeah,
but on England's form, they're going to have a good, you know, large percentage of them playing. So it's going to have a real feisty edge to it.
Hmm. So do you want to talk about the schedule? Should we mention it?
I think we should.
Honourable mention. The reason we're going to do it is because it's on my iPad in front of me right now. So they start off on the 3rd of July playing the DHL Stormers in Cape Town before moving on to play a South Africa Invitational side. God knows what that means. That's going to be in Port Elizabeth. A lot of travel.
That team will be all the South Africans that are playing in the English Premiership.
maybe at one club in particular.
Well, South Sea Sharks on the 10th of July in Durban. South Africa A, which is surely a South Africa Invitational side, Chris?
Probably. You know, all of these tours, you play like Presidents 15 and stuff like that, and you know, they probably do overlap, I think.
Yeah, there's a couple midweek ones like that. South Africa, both the South Africa International and A sides are midweek. One's in Nelspruit. Anyone?
No.
Not a popular holiday destination amongst the TRU guys. And then the Bulls in Pretoria in July, and that's kind of like the club side of the tour, and then three consecutive weekends playing the Springboks. The first in Johannesburg, then Cape Town, then Johannesburg again to top things off. So 2021 is a little while away, but when you think about it, it's only two Six Nations that a lot of these guys have to prove themselves.
Yeah, and isn't Eddie's contract up in 2021, or is...
Eddie's contract is up in 2021.
So, you know, that's going to be a pretty interesting year, I think, for, as Max quite rightly says, these England players want to continue to prove a point on the international stage. So, I think a lot of those boys who played in the final in against Africa will be there in the World Cup in 4 years' time, and they'll be a massive part of that Lions tour against the Springboks. So, yeah, interesting couple of years ahead, definitely, because, you know, you've got Wales who have started their new era at the weekend against the Barbarians. You've got Ireland who are going into a new phase. England are, you know, trying to build on the success, the relative success they had at the World Cup. So the next 2 years with the Lions, and then obviously the World Cup in France, is another interesting time for those Northern Hemisphere sides.
Why is he still... Why is Eddie Jones still there, though?
Do you think he could should have just...
Yeah, 100%. I think he's going to try and milk it out. I think we'll have an unsuccessful Six Nations. Wales will win the Grand Slam, and it will be, you know, you look back at his career after the Six Nations, you think, no, I'm not really.
But do you not think because everyone's changing and Eddie's sort of got his vision in place that he can maybe capitalise on that?
I don't see what the plan is for him.
If he wins the World Cup, he's gone. You know, he's.
I think he could have gone out on a real high anyway with them just getting to the final. I don't understand why he's
maybe
there.
He just wants to Grand Slam, isn't
he? I think, but I don't. When did we last win a Grand Slam?
2017.
No, 16.
Who's the coach then?
Eddie Jones.
Was he the coach?
Yeah, because we went on that ridiculous run of beating Australia in the summer of 2016, and then I think we won it in 2017.
Okay, so that's one thing he's won. 2016, yeah. So that's the one thing he's won. He's like a grand...
But not a Grand Slam.
Not a Grand Slam.
Yeah.
So you think he wants a Grand Slam?
I think he wants another Grand Slam, or something to hold
And then on. Finish on that?
I mean, if you look at the... I think England play New Zealand again, don't they, next autumn? I've got a feeling. And they've got two tests in Japan in the summer. So I think he want to go over there, won't he, again with England and play Japan, who hold him in such high regard.
I don't know. I would have gone.
That's it.
I would have just toured around the UK, just sell him a book, and then gone somewhere else.
Well,
that's what I would have done.
I mean, everyone's got, you know.
Max is open for a vacancies for a head coach role if anyone needs it.
If England Rugby would like to employ Max Ashcroft, he comes with a hefty signing on fee for the TRU boys. Yeah. I don't think Sedge would be too pleased either, to be honest. We'll talk a bit about Worcester versus Sale, because Worcester have had a brilliant start to the season, currently sitting in fourth place with 13 points. Obviously, columnist Ethan Waller playing week in, week out for Worcester at the minute.
Yeah, he's... You know, they must be absolutely delighted, Joe. You know, they've had a really, really good start to the season. I think I watched them play Exeter, and it was not horrendous conditions, but they played really, really well against them. And then I think since then they picked up some really good wins. I think they beat Quins as well. And then obviously the win against Sale on the weekend lifts them into the top four. The win at the weekend, you know, they'll be absolutely delighted with. You know, they weren't particularly great until Sale went down to 14 men. And they managed to grind out the victory there. But, you know, if you'd asked any Worcester fan who was experiencing battling relegation or 11th, 12th, 10th over the last how many other years, they would have snapped your hand off for a top four start. And like you quite rightly mentioned, Joe, at the top of the pod, they're flying in Europe as well. They've made a good, solid start. They've got two interesting games to come against Dragons, over the next couple of weekends. So, you know, they keep performing well in that, and then tying that in with the league form, I think everyone at Six Ways will be pretty pleased.
Yeah, that's the thing. In Europe so far, winning at NSI and then losing away to Castres, which probably isn't the worst result you could ever take. We'll talk a bit about Northampton versus Leicester, the East Midlands derby that never fails to deliver, yet again doesn't fail to deliver. Northampton 36, Leicester 13. Leicester, arguably favourites for the drop.
They were, as much as, because I saw the highlights on Monday, this is as much as Northampton played really well. I thought they, you know, the speed of the ball that they were able to get, like, cut. I think one of the tries, Ryan X passes unbelievably quick, but timed to absolute perfection. You know, Roy Hutchinson's on absolute fire. Proctor was brilliant for Northampton at the weekend. But as much as they all combined and played really well and allowed Big T as much room as possible to be as explosive as he possibly can, Leicester were horrendous. I mean, you did an interview, Joe, with Guy Thompson at the start of the season, during the Prem Cup. And he was saying, you know, the atmosphere is different. You know, we've got, you know, there's a good belief in the squad. We're trying to put last season to bed, and we've been working really hard in the pre-season, and, you know, we're going into the new campaign with a bit of optimism. And I just wonder where that hard work has gone, because, you know, Guy was absolutely right. We've seen him play really well in the Prem Cup. So how has it all of a sudden just gone back and even maybe backwards from last year? Because the set piece was horrendous on the weekend, and Jordan Murphy was quite rightly fuming after the game. So, yeah, they're in a bit of bother. And if you look at those sides that Max mentioned before that are down at the bottom, they are the ones who are really showing early alarm bells of your Tigers fans that they could be facing the drop at the end of the year.
Yeah, currently sat on 4 points. Still 22 points away. 22? Yeah, 22. 22 points away from Saracens. Sorry, math is not one of my strong points, Max. Bristol draw at home to a dogged London Irish 27-all. What a result for London Irish. What a season they're having already.
Yeah, no, it's good. I can't comment. I've not watched London Irish this season. But Bristol seem like they're playing well. Correct me if I'm wrong. I heard Harry Fackers having a good season.
Yeah.
You know, and they're, you know, they've spent a lot of money, but the ones have spent a lot of money doing players, except for Ian Madigan, who's probably the highest paid A-League player in the country, a nice 500k a year. Well, I bet he's having a little thing to himself, isn't he? He's probably enjoying it. He's probably loving life.
Wouldn't blame him.
So I don't think he'll be there much longer.
in short,
yeah. No. Look, I think London Irish have been building. You know, I think what they've done over the sort of the last 3-4 years, they've been building nicely. I think they've got a good core group of players there and a good youth system as well. They've always had a really strong academy system there. That they've always been, if you look at all the players that have come out of the academy system there.
All the players at Bath.
Yeah, pretty much all the players at Bath, Watson and Joseph. They've all come out of that academy system. So they know what they're doing there. Which is always a great model, and the salary cap also likes homegrown talent as well.
We were talking about that earlier, weren't we?
We were. So their business model is probably a good one that the Premiership Rugby will like.
Yeah, definitely, probably, yeah.
I think Max has just been in stitches the whole time we've been doing this.
He's been sitting on his hands for the last few weeks whilst we've been doing podcasts. It's like, I've got something really good to say.
Yeah. Got to get you two off that fence, eh?
I go, no.
I'm on it every single week.
I said, see, Khaleesi should be dropped. Didn't get any backlash from that. I'm not Stephen Jones. Exeter win at Sandy Park, 38-3, beating a pretty solemn-looking Wasps team.
Yeah, I know they've got a few injuries once again, but they were completely outplayed on the weekend. Wasps won there, didn't they, last year?
Yeah.
And I think that was probably their best performance of the season. This year they were completely second best. Exeter were ruthless, and I mean, you've got to look at it. I think Rob Baxter would have been disappointed with the way they lost to Bristol in not the previous round of the Prem, but the one before the Champions Cup games. But then to go and put a performance in against La Rochelle like they did was absolutely brilliant. Beat Glasgow at home, puts them in a fantastically strong position in the pool for the Champions Cup, and then to go and put a similar complete performance in, if you like, against Wasp was massively pleasing for them. And obviously with what's happened at Saracens, this is the year that Exeter really think they can go and win the big prize again. But they've got stiff competition, like we said. Bristol there are playing well, and I think they obviously Charles Piotel resigned today, didn't he? Yeah. And they said they've got I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, from Fiji, Semi Radradra, is that how you say it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Less flamboyantly is usually how you say
they've
it.
They've got him coming in, which is another massive statement from Pat Lam and Bristol. And, you know, all season, Pat Lam's been coming out and saying all the right things and very calculated in everything they're doing. I think, you know, Max says there, you know, they've got the money behind them, but they've done it well so far. And, you know, if they stay within the boundaries, the Premiership will be. You know, I'm all for it, because every single game I've watched so far in terms of the highlights and the games that I've been on BT Sport have been absolutely brilliant from a Bristol perspective. So yeah, they'll be probably challenging for top four. I think Exeter though will be mightily pleased with the last few weeks of work that they've put in.
Well, we did an interview with Charles Piotel just before the Barbars game in the summer. I think it was the 1st of June that game was. He was talking about how gutted that Bristol actually were to miss out on that top six. Never mind top four.
I think in the first game of the season he beat Bath, so he must have been referring to the interview he did with you, Joe, because he said exactly the same thing. They were actually massively disappointed with the fact that, yes, they were miles away, well, not miles away, but they were a decent amount of room away from the relegation scrap. But to not finish in the top six shows exactly the vision and the plans from his club, and they've made, you know, some great signings. Nathan Hughes has been
maybe the best he's ever looked.
Rory Hutchinson potentially, or Big T, or a couple of Northampton lads, actually. He's been probably one of the best players of the Premiership season so far. He's had such a massive impact for Bristol, and you look at Wasps and you feel like, you know, they may have had to get rid of him because of the money potentially he was on. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but they're missing someone like Nathan Hughes, I think. So, you know, they're doing really well, and, you know, they'll be hoping it continues.
Yeah, of course. The final game of the Premiership weekend was Harlequins 23, Gloucester 19. Gloucester already splitting opinion, not exactly maintaining any form. I mean, they're seventh at the minute. That is two wins and three losses. It's a classic Gloucester performance so far this season.
Yeah. Saw them against Montpellier on BT Sport and the Champions Cup, and they actually came back into the game really well. I mean, Joe Simpson was again probably one of the standout performances, but Sunday was a game where both teams, you know, it's been a bit mixed. It's still that early season rust. I know we're in December now, but it's early season rust. But Quinn's managed to get the win, and that's two wins in a row for them now going into this weekend. But yeah, Gloucester have been, you know, after such a good season last year, finishing fourth, and all the sort of Danny Cipriani factor in the fact that they managed to get back to where they think they belong. Yeah, they will be disappointed with how things have gone so far, but I think Europe's now done and dusted for them. So I think Johan Ackerman will be the first person to tell you that the league form is where they want to focus on now.
Yeah, I watched the Gloucester game. I'll set the scene for you. It was a Sunday. It was Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, this Sunday. It's got to be
Sunday. I'd had a few pints on the Saturday.
Nice.
And I was like, you know, I watched Gloucester. They were playing
Quins,
yeah. I was like, I'll go watch this. So, you know, got on the sofa, turned it on. I was asleep within 10 minutes of it starting. And that probably sums up the game. I was on and off, sleeping on and off. It was a bit bland, I thought. Ollie Foley looked well. Chris Harris looked solid in defence, I thought.
No hair.
Yeah, he's done the initiation. Yeah, it was good to see. Atkinson looked good. But Quinn's just... Marcus Smith seems to be a bit off the boil, I think, a little bit. I thought Chisholm played really well. He scored a great try, showing his pace on the outside. I think that Gloucester and Quins will just end up being top six, won't they? I think they've got a few losses in them and a few good wins, but that's about it, really.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Max. For two teams who were sort of challenging for the top four so much last year, you know, it was between those two sides, I think, or for a long period, especially towards the end of the season.
Yeah. So you would have said Gloucester were the informed team at some parts of last season.
Definitely.
They don't look the team they were last year.
No, I mean they've managed to finish third, I think, comfortably in the end. But yeah, the degree they don't look as sort of, they haven't got the same rhythm or the same cohesion as they have last year. So yeah, it'd be disappointing for them. I mean, you know, they played Saracens at home and the last game of the Prem before going to Quinns. So, you know, they'll be wanting to bounce back as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so we move once more. Well, that's kind of, well, obviously that's kind of the end of the Premiership weekend. No more Premiership for two more weeks. Everyone moves back into European competition to play 2 weeks on the trot back to back against a selected European opponent. So we might as well kind of kick off. Let's maybe start looking at some of those games if you're keen, Max.
Yeah, why not?
Get that there for you. So it starts off Friday night. Bath hosting Clermont Auvergne. The wreck. The only thing that could go to plan here is if it really rains for Bath and they have to call the game off.
Yeah, it's not a great game to go straight into. I think there's one clear winner in that game. That's going to be Clermont.
Yeah, Nick Abendanon back at the wreck.
Yeah, what a hero. A Bath legend.
Bath legend. Hear stories of him from the...
I've heard many a story. There's one story. Apparently, when he got signed straight out of Bath, straight out of college or school.
Oh, yeah.
It was on the old training ground, and apparently the coach was like, yeah, we'd like to, you come do a trial or you've signed, I can't remember the ins and outs. And it was a really sunny day in Bath. Apparently there was this lad that was sunbathing on the side of the ground with sunglasses on, no top on. Everyone was like, who's this? This blonde, young blonde-haired lad. Like, who's he? All the old boys were like, who's this kid? And apparently he was just topping up his tan, as you do. And it caught on the pitch. And all the older boys soon shut up and realised how good of a player he was. And I think that was the start of his very successful Bath career.
And his even more successful banking career in France.
Yeah. There's a few English guys that have got some good banking jobs in France.
Or their bankers have got,
I think,
good
that
jobs
moves us on to our next one, which is Carl Ferns at Lyon.
Yeah. Yeah, Carl's Lyon, who the top 14 are playing Benetton against. So is Seb injured at the minute, Chris?
He was ill for the game against whoever they played first. It wasn't Lyon. Leinster. He was ill for that game, but I think he was back against Northampton. Against Northampton the other week. So, he was just ill and obviously still coming back from the World Cup, I think. So
was that. Carl, all the best to Carl, I'm sure. He played with Averian Max Skofic, was it? North?
Yep, Max captained him.
We don't like to hold that over Carl's head. He's bigger than us, Max.
Yeah.
Speaking of Northampton, they are hosting Leinster.
Big game.
That's
really
a huge game.
I think it's probably a standout game, isn't it? The weekend.
I'm just trying to think, yeah.
I mean, Leinster, of course, are flying in the Pro 14, and Northampton have been absolutely brilliant. And with it being at Franklin's Garden as well, I think that gives it a little bit more edge towards Northampton. So I think this will be a big barometer of where this Northampton side are. I presume they'll have some of the main hitters back, which they were missing last week. I don't think Laws was playing. Dan Bigger wasn't, because Grayson played, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if they get the big hitters back as well, I think that's definitely the game to put your feet up and watch on Saturday lunchtime, I think it is.
Yeah, Sam Matavesi, of course, just signed for Northampton Saints, so they do have an international hooker in their lineup again. Harlequins travel to Belfast to play Ulster at the Kingspan. That's going to be, Max Ashcroft under his breath just whispered, tough game, and we'll find out more now.
I just think it's always a tough place to go and play. Billy Burns is having a really strong season. I just think it's a tough place to go. And I think after watching them against Gloucester on Sunday, I think it's, no, was no, was it Northampton's? So I think it's just going to be a tough game. It'll be a good one to watch that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Ulster have been brilliant. Again, I mean, they're in the same pool as conference, sorry, as Leinster, so they're behind them at the moment in the Pro 14. But yeah, I think they've been outstanding. That performance supporting against Clermont, I don't know if you saw that one, Joe, in the last round of the Champions Cup. They were, you know, Clermont went to Ulster with a lot of people talking about them potentially going on and winning the Champions Cup this year because they've been so close in previous years, and the performance they put in against Quinns in the opening weekend. But Ulster were excellent, and I think the way they're playing, as much as you know you want to see the English sides do well in Europe, it's got a big, big ask for the Harlequins to go and get a result on the Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, La Rochelle played Glasgow Warriors. Probably hope Glasgow Warriors win for so Gary's a bit happy about Scottish rugby.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we'd like them to maybe get a result with Sale playing on the Sunday, so
more on Sale to come.
Yes.
Ospreys, the miserable Ospreys host Racing 92, probably going to get smashed at the
away
Liberty.
Away win.
Oh, easy. And Munster host Sarries. That's a big game.
Oh yeah, that is a really big game, isn't it?
Depends who Sarries send.
Yeah, I think this will be it now because they've got all their internationals back. You know, the last time they played in Europe, they were it was a bit of a mixed bag of a squad. So it'll be interesting to see who Sarries do send in that game, and I will get a sort of marker of whether they're going to be taking Europe seriously or just focus on the Premiership.
That's the thing, isn't it? That is the big question for Saracens, because it's just a case of, do they want to risk anyone in the Champions Cup with getting an injury, like Owen Farrell's out for the rest of the season, and they have to rely on Manu Vunipola? As much as he's obviously a magnificent young potential international, can they rely on a 19-year-old for the rest of the season?
It's whether they rely or they give him the learning of playing in these big European matches, and I think it's a decision Mark McCall will make. He's probably already made it anyway. About how seriously they're going to take the Champions Cup, because we've seen the last two Prem games they played against Gloucester and against Bath, how well they performed. So if you know your likes Farrell and Itoje do travel to Munster on the weekend, then that'd be a very interesting one. I think the draw last time between Munster and Racing was a big result for Saracens. It gives them sort of maybe an extra edge and an extra sort of boost that they could still get through to potentially that quarterfinal stage. You might not get a home draw, but be interested to see who they go with on the weekend.
Yeah, Sunday there's a battle of the mediocre between Gloucester and Connacht, both teams seemingly out of the Champions Cup.
If Connacht would played well, didn't they, in that first game against Montpellier?
Oh, they played really well. I just think
Gloucester 100%. Yeah, they're their mind will be in the end towards Christmas and their Premiership action, I think, mate. So, that will be probably not the game to choose, unfortunately, on Sunday lunchtime. That's the only one, isn't it? So yeah, you're gonna have to watch it if you want to watch.
Yeah,
it.
If you want to watch Sunday lunchtime rugby, you don't have much choice other than watching Gloucester, unfortunately. Although Joe Simpson might do something magical. What else we got? We've got Toulouse versus Montpellier. Probably don't really know what's going to happen in there. Probably Toulouse win. And then finally, the battle that we'd all been waiting to talk about: Sale Sharks versus Exeter Chiefs. Exeter having a great start in the Champions Cup for once, but they're against Sale, who we all quite like.
Do we? Yeah. Go Sale. We like Sale. I think it's going to be, hopefully Sale, you know, Fortress, AJ Bell and all that, hopefully can fill
sold
it.
Sold out. It's sold out today.
You heard it. Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's great news.
Disbelief in your
voice. That's great news. I haven't been watching much of Sale, to be honest, and I haven't been watching much of Exeter, so you're probably best equipped to answer this one, Joe.
This is going to be the least insightful rugby podcast that's ever been produced by anyone today.
Yeah, probably.
In which case, we might as well wrap up talking about the 15-a-side game and slowly transition to the 7-a-side game. Dubai Sevens starts this weekend. Chris, we've been doing a few things in the lead up to the Dubai competition. Always a great way to start the World Series season.
Max is trashing the place. He's pulled the handle off the door.
Vandal. Dubai always the greatest place to be starting the World Series season, as per. Chris, from what you've seen from the coverage, obviously I know it's kind of, you're going to loop back and ask me a question because I've done a bit of it. What have you made from kind of the coverage you've been doing up to so far?
I think first and foremost, the coverage that we've done has been excellent. You know, we've got some great, and I know from your time in Chester, Joe, we've managed to get some quotes from, you know, some of the main names, Simon Amor, Mike Friday, Dallin Stanford, who's obviously going to be commentating on the series this season. So, and, you know, the access we've been giving to England sevens teams as well over the last... England's women's sides, to be honest, over the last sort of month or 2 months or so has been great. And Joe's done a piece with Amy Wilson-Hardy, which has gone out this afternoon. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's been brilliant. The and obviously Gary's stuff with Scotland, excellent as well with Robbie Ferguson. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the coverage has been good from our side, but it's sort of, you know, the sevens never really gets talked about that much, I don't think, in terms of, you know, and maybe a normal season. You know, we've got... it's starting in Dubai, and people may start to look at it towards the end of the calendar year and going into next year, with it being an Olympic year, and I think that probably puts it more into the spotlight. Great Britain did so well in a men's competition, didn't they, Joe, in Rio?
Well, the women did really well too, got to the bronze medal match, just fell short to Canada.
Yeah, and I mean, Great Britain going up against, in the men's, going up against Fiji is difficult. You know, it's always going to be tough, but I mean, Joe, you know you're keeping an eye on a lot of things that are going on. I mean, who do you think for both men's and women's could really get the season underway with a decent performance over in Dubai?
Do you know, that is a pretty good question. I think there's three teams for me that are all at Chester, funnily enough, that I'm gonna list off right now. So Ireland, for one. It's their first time being on the World Series as a kind of a regular side, but there's something special about that team. I don't know what it is. I think they play great rugby, and then on top of that, they've worked so hard on defence. They really tightened up to win the Athlete Factory competition. In particular, yeah, because South Africa actually in the lead up to that final had only conceded, I think, 3 tries the entire tournament. And then for Ireland to score 3, it told you kind of what Ireland had been working on and their understanding. But then in the same breath, I'm going to say South Africa looking pretty good going into it. And although they didn't have a great Chester competition, I'm going to say the USA. I think their second place finish last year just kind of sets them apart. And Olympic year, American team, is that a massive surprise? And it's the same with the women's comp. I think the USA won the Colorado leg of their World Series. And yeah, then Australia and New Zealand always going to be up there.
Yeah, I think the USA is a good one, Joe, because I mean, between the both of us, we've been sort of following their progress over the last 3-4 years, and Maya Friday spends a lot of time doing some stuff with us. He's always talked about sort of the progression, and in terms of the sevens game, Joe, we've seen sort of how well they have done over the last sort of 2-3 years. I mean, they had the World Cup there in San Francisco last summer, or the summer before, I think it was. But to finish second last year, and I know they, you know, a lot of things will be said about, oh well, they're not really showing it on the 15 stage, but the Olympics, as you say, Joe, in America is regarded as the main sporting event, maybe alongside, you know, your Super Bowls, etc.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think, and the thing is as well, it's different to the UK. You have to remember, in the UK, if you're selecting as Olympian, you're classed as an amateur. Whereas that's just not the case in America. In the case in America, you can actually get paid to be a sprinter, you can get paid to do gymnastics. Sometimes it's done through a collegiate system where actually now college athletes in America do get paid as well. So there's actually this massive influx of money into creating better athletes for the American kind of Olympic teams, Pan American Games teams, everything.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. And Mike always echoes that viewpoint, doesn't he? That, you know, those athletes who may fail at NFL or may fail at sprinting can always come into rugby sevens and do a job. And I mean, like from USA to looking at England, is, you know, they're both the men's and the women's side, you know, trying to get that progression back. And then the men's team had so many injuries last year.
Yeah.
And with it being a Team GB year, and with Simon Amor, of course, heading up that programme, those England lads want to really put down a marker and have such a successful year that they're on the plane to Japan.
Well, the thing is, in terms of Great Britain, when we talk about Great Britain, we talk literally Wales, Scotland, England. Ireland's not in the mix because of the way the unions are structured. So, well, one, if there's any Northern Irish lads, they can't get selected for the Ireland team.
Right.
So that's a start as well if they qualify for the Olympics. That's case in point. I don't know what else we can talk about that with. Maybe it's to do with the border thing they keep on talking about on telly. I don't pay attention. And then Wales finished 13th or something last season. When we spoke to Luke Trahan in the lead up to the start of last season's World Series, he was hoping for a top 10 finish. Didn't happen. Don't have the depth. There's not the depth because literally the way it's selected in Wales, they have three professional players and then they randomly select. Not randomly, obviously, I'm sure it's strategized, but it does seem quite random because sometimes there's not a consistent pool of players the entire season. And then Scotland seems to be the most similar to England.
Yeah.
In that there's centrally contracted players and then there's also wider players and then they even have so it's basically like three groups. So you have your central group, your outer group, then your outer group. And Scotland got Femi Sofolaren. I mean, that's one thing. I saw Femi out in Carmier in July.
Yeah, we spoke to Darren Fern, didn't he? Because he was at Newcastle Uni and he was, hired full of praise for him. So, yeah, obviously changing the colour of his shirt for this series, Joe.
Well, I mean, he'd already changed it to play for England. He played for Scotland at under-18s. Yeah. Outside centre, was it? Something like that? I don't think he played on the wing anyway. But Femi, obviously, do you know what? If you want to get more caps, go for it. I wouldn't say that Femi's... Maybe because of a lack of integration with the senior men's squad, the centrally contracted England squad. Maybe he wasn't as switched up. I saw him at London. I wasn't blown away. Good attacking player. Defensively, I think is where I do mainly have my problems. But the thing is, playing sevens is it's like playing 15s. You got to do one or the other. You can't do both. Mm. I mean, some guys could probably do both.
Well, Bennett crossing to.
Well, yeah, but he still had the transition.
Right.
You know, there was still a transition period and he didn't, when you think about it, he didn't actually really play a major part in that GB team that won the silver medal. The GB team was actually a majority of English players that do have central contracts and are very well taken care of.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's the way, and when you're talking about Simon Amell being head coach, obviously he thoroughly deserves it and, you know, someone I have a pretty good relationship with now. Who else would it be?
Yeah, it wouldn't, because obviously Scotland, Gary mentioned his piece, they're under Kieran Beattie now, so, you know, they've had a bit of a change, and Ireland are continuing to sort of progress as strongly as they can with Greg O'Shea at the helm, in and around the team, from Love Island. But yeah, you're
very
right.
Very nice man, I should just say.
Very nice, but for someone, you know, Silas Calibre, who's been around the game for so long. And I think if you go to Olympics, you had such an impact and finish with a silver medal, it'd be brainless not to go with him again. I don't think so. I think you're right, Joe. It seemed the most obvious and correct choice for Simon to be heading up another Olympic team for next year.
Yeah, and he says in the piece that we did with him was talking about kind of GB have got it massively stacked against them in terms of getting game time. It's the same with the women. And I think actually for the women, it's probably worse because England don't look in a good place on the sevens. Maybe that's my opinion, talking too loudly there. I think they've got a lot of 18-year-olds in that squad from what I'm told. And then Charlie Haight has only been a head coach for 2 months. So it's massively intriguing to see how they'll do. Ireland, obviously it's the same situation as the men. Wales... Yeah, they were right. And then the women, to be fair, Scotland women's sevens team is actually pretty good. Ryan Lloyd, I'm sure, will be going from 15s to sevens. But that's actually where we see a lot of transition of those kind of players. It's 15s and sevens in the women's game because obviously the game is a bit more athletic, which is why we talk about having the smaller ball and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, Dubai is going to be interesting. There's a massive, massive carrot at the end of it all.
Yeah, has to be.
Imagine the chance to be an Olympian.
Yeah, I think the players now will probably say, we're just trying to get off to a good start to the season and focus on the first couple of legs before the new year. But every single player who goes and takes up the pitch tomorrow and pulls on that shirt for whatever country will know that the Olympics is there in the back of their mind.
So close.
You know, you can get to World Cup finals, you can get to... you know, Champions Cup finals, you can get to whatever final in the game. You tell me that a player in rugby doesn't want to try and win a medal at the Olympics. I mean, you know, Dan Bibby, you know, won that silver medal. It's, you know, he will be forever with, you know, an Olympic medal, and not many people can say that. So
yeah,
you know,
and he's back in for Dubai as well.
Yeah, which is great to hear. But I think for an athlete, you know, the pinnacle is going to the Olympic Games over in Japan. We saw how successful it was at the Rugby World Cup, and I'm sure those athletes will be really looking forward to it and focused on getting there for the sevens.
We can't really talk about this because obviously the recording time's kind of about to tick over, but it's funny how we call sevens players athletes.
Well, they are, aren't they?
No, I'm just saying, because obviously there's nothing real, well, obviously than a discipline, there's nothing too different between them 15s players. I'm not saying it as a criticism or anything like that. I'm just saying it's interesting because as soon as we put that Olympic connotation on it, they're athletes.
Yeah,
that's all it was. We're writers, we like words. this that's what it was more than anything. I just quite like the thought of that. Anything else to say on the rugby, Chris?
No, I think we've covered Max's come back very nicely, and
he's gone.
Yeah, he's busy with his other friends. We've Champions Cup, Premiership, we've had a look at. Obviously the sevens is also the big story this weekend. So yeah, as the World Cup finishes, the rugby continues at full pelt as always. So yeah, looking forward to seeing the sevens this weekend. Obviously it'd be on Sky. And looking at if it's on Sky, it should be normal. It normally is all the seven stuff.
Yeah, it usually is. I just remembered I don't have Sky anymore.
All the Champions Cup stuff on over the weekend, Channel 4 and BT Sports. So yeah, looking forward to watching it all.
Yeah. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for listening to this Talking Rugby podcast. I've been joined by Max Ashcroft, whose social media accounts escape me. And I've also been joined by Chris Heal. Chris, where can people follow you?
C_Heal on Instagram and Facebook. Facebook and Twitter. Max Ashcroft is at Max_Ashcroft on Twitter. Please follow him. He's only got 44 followers. Bless him.
Oh, I've got 800.
Bless him.
And you can follow me at JoeHarvey34 on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for listening. I'm sure you'll hear us next time.